Sarvate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 89. Krishna and Arjuna retrieve a Brahmana's sons. Text number 22. Pete, how come I've got to sit here and look at myself? What's it for? For prosperity. Posterity. Huh? In the annals of time. Okay, alright. Vipra grihitva mritakam.
Vipra grihitva mritakam.
Rajadvar yupadhoyasaha.
Rajadvar yupadhoyasaha.
Idam provacha vilapana. Oh, sorry. Idam provacha vilapan.
Idam provacha vilapan.
Aturo dina manasaha.
Aturo dina manasaha.
Vipro grihitva mitakam.
Vipro grihitva mitakam.
Rajadvar yupadhoya saha.
Rajadvar yupadhoya saha.
Idam provacha vilapan.
Idam provacha vilapan.
Aturo dina manasaha.
Aturo dina manasaha.
Vitro grihitva mritakam.
Taking.
Taking.
Mritakam.
Mritakam.
The corpse.
The corpse.
Raja.
Raja.
Of the king.
Of the king.
Ugrasena.
Ugrasena.
Dwari.
Dwari.
At the door.
Upadhaya.
Upadhaya. Presenting it.
Presenting it.
Sahi.
Sahi.
Sorry. Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Idam.
Idam.
This.
This.
Pravacha.
Pravacha.
Said.
Said.
Vilapan.
Vilapan.
Lamenting.
Lamenting.
Aturaha.
Asura.
Agitated.
Agitated.
Dina.
Dina.
Depressed.
Depressed.
Manasaha.
Manasaha.
Whose mind?
Whose mind?
The Brahmana took the corpse and placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court. Then, agitated and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following. Brahma dvisha shatadhiyo lubdhasya vishayat manaha. Chatrabandho karmado sat panchatvam me kator bhakaha. The Brahmana said, this duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmanas, this unqualified ruler addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancies in the execution of his duties. Purport. Presuming that he himself had done nothing to cause his son's death, the Brahmana thought it reasonable to blame King Ugrasena. In the Vedic social system, the monarch is considered responsible for everything occurring in his kingdom, good or bad. Even in a democracy, a manager who takes charge of some group or project should accept personal responsibility for any failure, rather than, as is so common today, trying to place the blame on his subordinates or superiors. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatisva Padantikam mukham karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande shri gurum dinataranam. This is an interesting phenomena. Perhaps we could tell the breakfast party out there or whatever it is to keep the noise levels down. Everybody wants to blame someone for everything. Now, there's a very important point here. It says here that the Brahmana assumed that he had done nothing to cause the death of his child. Right? Assuming that he had done nothing to cause the death of his child. So in other words, the Brahmana was a very pious person. Very pious character. In other words, that he was a Brahmana. Otherwise, in this day and age, nobody has any good qualifications, yet they still want to blame the king for everything. Or the leaders for everything that goes wrong. Anything and everything that goes wrong, they'll blame somebody else. Without accepting any portion of the blame, despite their disqualification. So, assuming that everybody is innocent and praiseworthy in terms of their behaviour and character, as was seen in previous ages and occasionally seen in this day and age, assuming that people were suitably qualified, then it would be appropriate for them to blame the king, right, for the misfortune that befalls the citizens. It was the king's responsibility to see that the members of society are following the prescriptions that are given for, what shall we call it, for peaceful social existence, coexistence. This is one of the reasons why the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras have different guidelines by which they are meant to act. And if each of the different classes of or members of society, the different classes of society, work cooperatively according to the guidelines that they're given, then by rights we should have a peaceful environment. And so, and it was the Kshatriya's responsibility to see that the citizens of the state were following those rules and regulations as they're given for the different varnas and ashramas. It's an interesting system, actually. We're going to be studying, now think about it, we're going to be studying in the Bhakti Shastri today. In the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes different levels by which one can be elevated to the point of pure devotional service, to the topmost achievement of human existence. But in that gradation or development of bhakti, there are some activities which are not actually bhakti in and of themselves. And vanashram is one of those activities. Living a life of discipline, if you like. Following certain rules and regulations. Even simply giving in charity to others is described as being beneficial. Doesn't necessarily ascribe to the practitioner a transcendental benefit. But by being disciplined in that way, by being ordered, structured, following these rules and regulations of especially the Varnashram system, then people gradually are elevated. It's a sacrifice, basically. The tendency we can see it in this day and age. People are not trained or guided properly, and so the tendency is to basically just behave like animals. And so thereby the consciousness becomes degraded. But when there's order and structure within society, and when there's a spiritual focus, a spiritual goal, to be aspired for, then people will be inspired, naturally inspired, to want to follow these rules and regulations. Of course, that's why this principle of the brahmanas being a very good example is important. You know, if the brahman is not following and then he criticizes the king who's not following, then there's no benefit in that, or there's no effect. But when the brahmanas are following the principles recommended for the brahminical culture, then that means by their austerity, by their learning, by their practical behaviour, by their sense control, equanimity, by their mercy, they inspire others to also come to that platform. And because they're on that platform of purity, if you like, solcham and pavitram, then they're in a position actually to instruct and guide others, even if necessary to chastise. So, and we're seeing that here, the brahmana is faultless, and so therefore understanding these principles, and especially in an age where Vedic culture was prominent, dominant, then the king could be rightfully criticised for his impropriety or his lack of qualification in leading the citizens. Of course, in this particular situation, we've got an interesting situation where the king is actually qualified. As we analyse the situation, we discover that the king is shouldn't be criticised either. So something else is going on. There's another reason. There's actually another reason why the child was taken. Which will be revealed. Yeah. In the Vedic social system, the monarch is considered responsible for everything occurring in his kingdom. And we even have that within our society. The leaders of the society are held responsible for the standards of behaviour and the standards of achievement within the community, or at least they should be. And you know, the benefits of that are when things are going good, then you get heaps of praise. Everybody tells you what a wonderful fellow you are. But when things go wrong, then you can expect to get the cane, you know, boom, from everybody. But it's not just that we expect the leaders to be perfect, and then we can do what we like either. It has to be a balance. And then, you know, when there's inspirational leadership, we see in the example of the Srimad Bhagavatam of Lord Ramchandra, wherein his rule was characterized by a high level of purity and engagement in devotional service, by his very exemplary behavior. He inspired the citizens to also be exemplary in their behaviour. So it mentions there, you know, that the whole planet was prosperous. So much so that, you know, if you didn't want to die, you didn't have to die. You could live for as long as you liked, for example. Which is, you know, why people want they want Ram Raja. They want the kingdom of Ram reinstated. So, you know, when there are good citizens and there are good leaders, then there's prosperity and peacefulness. Harmony within society, Prabhupada explains that the Varnashram system is a system which is meant to be like the Kshatriyas are described to be like the arms for protection, the Brahmanas like the head, the Vaishyas the belly or the torso, and the Shudras are the legs. And each one of these different portions of society has a responsibility, a function and a responsibility. They are all meant to work cooperatively, harmoniously, for the benefit of the whole body, for the benefit of the whole social structure. So there has to be cooperation. Of course, in this day and age, that's a very rare. It's very rare to see that kind of behaviour. Usually, we see in the leaders, or quite often we see in the leaders become administrators and then just exploit the people and take advantage of the resources. So you'll find in some countries, you'll find the president and his assistants, they're all living in multi-million-dollar mansions, flying in executive jets around the world, and then the people are living in poverty. You know, the country has enormous wealth, and yet it's only going into the pockets of the of a few people, and everybody else is in poverty. So this, you know, this is a symptom of Kali Yuga. And even we've seen in our experience this example that is mentioned here by Hridayananda Maharaj in this purport that in a democracy something goes wrong in a person's government and then they say, "Oh, I didn't know about it. Got nothing to do with me. Not my fault." So it's a big responsibility to be a leader. And in one sense, you know, who is a leader? Everybody is a leader. Especially in our society, for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada wanted us to establish a Brahminical culture so that we could set an example of purity, of discipline, of devotional service as a lifestyle alternative that would be very attractive for people because of the benefits that would come as a result. And so Prabhupada wanted us to individually and collectively develop these qualities of devotion and especially this Brahminical culture, because our devotional culture is based in, the foundation is based in, if we're looking at it from a material perspective, it's based in activities in the mode of goodness, which means austerity, for example, samo, being equipoised, dhammas, sense controls, tapa, austerity, it's recommended. And you know, fairly simple things. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, rising early in the morning, chanting japa, especially early in the morning if we want to be, if we want to really absorb ourselves in the chanting of Hare Krishna, then the best, the most effective way is to rise early in the morning. It's one of the most important, I mean, so many important things, but one of the most important things. And this is a jagya. What does Krishna say? Jagyanam japa jagyosmi. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of japa, for example. Right? Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. So, developing this culture within ISKCON is important, actually, because if we are to lead, then we have to lead by example. Right? That's what leadership's all about. And so Prabhupada wanted us to establish that culture in the mode of goodness, devotional service in the mode of goodness, embracing these principles, and then we can, by developing these qualities, then what comes as a result of that are good qualities in the personality of the devotee, which then become inspiring not only for us individually but for us all collectively and for others as well. They become inspired by that good example. So in that way, then we as a group have an influence on society. That's really how it works. But first of all, it depends on ourselves. It all starts with the individual, basically. Here we're assuming, the Brahmana assumed, well, I'm following properly, so then it's not my fault. But this is why it depends very much on the individual. But then the individuals all practicing Krishna consciousness properly or effectively, then collectively we have strength or potency. And by that example, by that collective strength of Krishna consciousness, then we're actually able to have an influence, we're actually able to influence others. So, the Brahmana is now setting the scene for this pastime, which is about to take place. He's a qualified Brahmana. His child has died, and so he's therefore laying the blame squarely at the feet of the king. And as we will see in the verses to come, he will lose 9 sons. So this is the beginning of a fairly lengthy period. This pastime took place over quite some time, actually, obviously. And it's providing an opportunity for Krishna to reveal again his unique character. As it turns out, it isn't the king who's responsible for the death of the children. Arjuna takes a vow to protect the Brahmana's son and builds a fortress, practically speaking, from which the child can't be taken, can't be attacked, can't be influenced. But then the child just disappears, the last child just disappears, boom, gone, completely, not even anybody left. And Arjuna then takes a vow, I'll find your son. Because the Brahmana just laughs. He said, look, if you can't stop the child from dying, then how are you going to, if you can't defeat providence or fate, then how do you have a chance of finding my son? So, anyway. Interesting story. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes.
What does it mean that it's uncommon for this death in America? This type of premature death?
Yes. It's uncommon?
Yeah.
I don't know. These days it's not, I don't think. I'm not sure. We're finding out. Sorry?
In Vedic times.
In Vedic times.
Yeah. Is that why he was upset? Is it uncommon that children die? And is that why he's upset?
We could assume so. In this day and age, it's not uncommon. Right? So that's why this pastime seems quite odd for us, because, you know, children are dying all the time. But you could assume in Vedic times that the children survived.
I think the one that was very uncommon that the children died before the country,
and they were quite pious people, so they this was obviously an unusual event. Otherwise he wouldn't bring it up. That was in Ramchandra's time.
So was it because he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead who was ruling the king, or all the kings had that power in Vedic times that they could decide when they were subject?
I think it was probably from my understanding, it was because Lord Ram was present. And so he basically created like a Vaikuntha atmosphere, even in the material world. But I haven't read elsewhere where that's been the case of a pious king. So it's special. Just as a special example, you know, like an exception that proves the rule, if you like. That the king is able to create a very, by his leadership and by, because, you know, it's described how the king is like the father of all of the citizens, not just the humans but also the other animals and so forth. So he has a responsibility, duty of care for everybody. That's how the Vedic culture was constructed. Everybody understood that. And so, and you see a remnant of it now, in one sense. You know, there's no rain, but everybody's looking to the politicians to solve the problem. Right? And yet, you know, everybody knows that Kevin Rudd or whoever, he's not going to make it rain. In fact, he says himself, look, I can't make it rain. John Howard's response was, pray. If you want rain, pray. Don't look at me. So, you know, and we see it with Maharaj Parikshit and other Kshatriyas. You know, they took that responsibility seriously. And so if there was a misbehaviour, or somebody's performing some sinful activities, then they were relegated to their place. If they were in civilized society, then they would be driven out, sent to the jungle or whatever. Put him, you know, punished. If they want to behave like an animal, okay, go and live with the people of the jungle, you know, the Aborigines, Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book. If you want to live in civilized society, then you live in the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra order. And that way then, those orders of society then followed certain rules and regulations, which would gradually elevate them. So as a result of that piety, then there was sufficient rain. There was, the seasons were regular, that regulated because the people were living harmoniously with the order of the Creator, if you like, then automatically things would work in a more harmonious way. Now we see that people are not living harmoniously in accordance with the laws of nature, natural laws of nature. And so now we're looking at all sorts of ecological disturbances as a result. So Ramchandra's time is unique, obviously, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and people are exceptionally qualified. But as an example, of what could be achieved. Anything else? Then this puts the onus back on us to be good examples, basically, to be strict practitioners of devotional service. We see in the modern day and age, especially even within ISKCON, it's fashionable to criticise the leaders. But you know, many of the people who are criticising the leaders, you sort of wonder what their standards of behaviour might be. Because first of all, the brahmanas wouldn't, if they were brahminical, and so therefore in a position to criticise others, they would do it in a very different way. Be more constructive. But you can see this is really the age of Kali. The age of Kali is very disturbed. Everybody's Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda. What is it? Manda Bhagyahi Upadrutaha. Upadrutaha means everybody's disturbed. So. But individually, And you know, our aspiration is to achieve the highest level of devotional service, which is to always be thinking of Krishna, always be, you know, naturally, spontaneously engaged in devotional service. And if one can't engage in spontaneous devotional service, always thinking of Krishna, then it's recommended that one follows the rules and regulations of devotional service. It's quite strict. If you can't do that, then it's recommended, well, just work for Krishna. If you can't do that, then there's a lower level. Still, there's order, there's structure, there's restriction, if you like. Although it's not restriction, these are the regulated principles of freedom, because following the regulated principles of devotional service frees us from the tyranny of the mind and the senses. It appears that we're being restricted, but actually, the practice of devotional service frees us from that entanglement in the mental and sensual. That's the power of practicing devotional service. Then we have choices. Then we actually have choice. In material existence, we think we've got choice when we can choose between a, you know, a Seiko and a Omega watch. Oh, I've got choice. How wonderful. But actually, the people don't have choice because they're just being dragged around by their mind and their senses. No choices, practically speaking. Or some sort of ephemeral choice of sense gratification. Oh, I have this one as opposed to that one. But when a person is engaged in devotional service, then they're actually able to transcend the pushings of the mind and the senses. People have freedom then. Because the mind and the senses, actually what happens then is they don't care about whether they've got a Rolex or a Seiko or a whatever. It becomes insignificant. In one sense, our modern culture is designed in such a way so that it's a consumer culture. And so therefore, you know, the advertising machinery and consumer society actually doesn't want us to get free from the influence of the mind and the senses. They want to keep us entrapped, enslaved, so that they can just, you know, keep selling us stuff and exploiting the citizens. Right? So, you know, that's why on a weekend, you know, it's almost 24-hour sport. So people can just sit there and, you know, just be, and then they flash up the images of what they should be buying. Buy this, buy that, Toyota, Holden, Ford, KFC, McDonald's, blah, 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 blah. It just keeps... The modern leaders of society, certainly those who hold the economic purse strings and who manipulate things, are basically trying to keep the citizens entrapped, enslaved to their system so that they can keep making money out of them. Keep them working. Keep them working hard. This is why, you know, people who are Krishna conscious are a danger because, you know, they don't follow that system. I say, forget it. We don't want to work so hard for such, you know, trivial things that don't even make you happy anyway. Huh? And you see it in India, you know, it's cricket on all the time. Right? And I mentioned this before, and then they'd selling the men fair and lovely. Fair and lovely facial cream so that they can have nice light coloured skin. It's amazing. You watch the cricket and then they're selling this cream to make your skin pale. Now, women are not watching the cricket. As far as I can discern. I've never seen any of the Mudajis watching the cricket. It's always the men watching the cricket. So who are they selling the stuff to? It's the men. Amongst other things. So many things. So many more things than we've got. Yeah, it's just designed to entrap us. But in a Brahminical culture, then the Brahmanas are studying the Vedas and performing their bhajan, basically. Performing their bhajan. And as a result of that, they're developing transcendental knowledge. They're getting a transcendental vision. They're able to see things in the correct perspective. They're not being pushed by the mind and the senses to just do this and do that and do the other thing. So that's the kind of culture that Prabhupada wanted us to establish. We're a little bit away from that, I think. Because, you know, most of us, we're caught up in that system. Because Prabhupada wanted to dismantle that system, or dismantle it, create an alternative, which was a much simpler lifestyle. Because we struggle with that, because, you know, we're living in the cities and we are surrounded by a very much a machine or a culture that's very difficult to break out of, but that's what Prabhupada wanted or recommended that we try to establish. And it's based on very much Brahminical culture. And you can see at the moment that the king or the administrators, they're not interested in Brahminical culture, or they're not supportive of it. They'll actually dismantle it. They're more interested in establishing, well, basically Prabhupada says it's the Vaishyas, the businessmen who are in control. So when there's a strong Brahminical culture, then they're in a position then to influence the others. Not that they take over and take control, but rather by their example and by their teaching, by their educational programs, then they change society that way. That's the idea. And then if the leaders are very powerful and strong, the administrators, the Kshatriyas are also then by that good association with the Brahmanas, they also become qualified. Then they create the environment within the society, which is what Lord Ramchandra did. And you know, that revolution is basically, it's fairly simple. That's why Prabhupada put so much effort into publishing books and distributing books, because that was the revolution. The revolution is to educate people. What are the standards of achievement in human society? Not that you've got a Rolex or a Seiko or a Omega watch or a Honda or a Holden or a whatever. Sony, Panasonic. Lenovo. These are all big names. If I say all of these things, they're immediately, instantly recognisable to everybody. Right? Everybody knows these things, because that's what the media just pushes at us. Right? But the Brahmanas are not interested in those things. So that's the revolution. The revolution is giving the knowledge. The real achievement in human life is understanding your spiritual identity. That's the real achievement. And if you get that, then you couldn't care less about anything else. And that's very attractive. You know, that renunciation is actually very attractive. That, and when the leaders see that, then they're inspired. Well, yeah, I'd like to be like that. I want to be like that. I want to be a leader in that way, rather than, you know, you know, there's that bumper sticker, he who's got the most, you know, at the end is the winner. No, it doesn't matter how much you've got at the end, nobody's a winner. There was a song when I was a kid. It's called "Everyone's a Winner," but actually, in the material world, everyone's a loser. There's no winners. So Brahmas understand that, and therefore they can be detached. And as a result of their detachment, then they're in a position of actually instruct and guide others and inspire then those who will actually administrate and lead the people. Anything else? Yes, Mahatmaji.
Actually, when you were telling about Prabhupada, he wanted to establish spiritual world in the material world.
Yeah.
He told the example of genie, how a genie has to work.
A genie?
One came down. You know the story, genie?
Genie?
Yeah.
The genie in the bottle.
Prabhupada told about the story of genie.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what he said, that there was a genie and a person he was interested in the spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada told, you have to do chanting. So genie came to the house, and genie said, I'll do anything for you, very quickly and very correctly. So you order whatever you want me to do. So the person said, clean my kitchen, clean my bedroom, clean my house, my living room, my dining room. She did everything quick. And the condition was, if you don't engage me in the work, then I'll kill you. So the person was very afraid. If I don't give her some work, she's going to kill me. So he was thinking. She did everything so meticulously and cleanly. Then he thought, how to not trick her. So he said, alright, go out in the outdoor, in the trees, and there are lots of long trees, you know, and just keep going up and down, up and down, up and down, and keep this all the time. So that's what Prabhupada wanted. Kirtanya Sadhari, that's what he did, chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. So that's what he was able to do, chanting of Hare Krishna, and genie was doing all the work. So Prabhupada established that we have to do chanting like genie is doing chanting. So we have to control our mind. So genie is like a mind. We have to control our mind in such a way that we can do chanting of Krishna all the time.
Yeah. Very good.
This is really good in New York to the devotees.
Yes. Yes, that'll keep us busy. Okay. Pantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.